his tears go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom.
What is up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a great show for you all today. I've got a very special friend of mine that's going to be joining us in just a couple of minutes. His name is Bill Whitford. He's been a law professor at the University of Wisconsin for over 35 years. He knows a lot about gerrymandering because he was the named plaintiff in the Wisconsin gerrymandering case that went all the way to the Supreme Court and sort of set some precedent, but didn't all at the same time. We're going to talk to Bill about that. I can't wait to dig into that conversation. But of course, everyone, some breaking news right before we came on air. It seems to be that is the state of play these days. And I'm not talking about one of Donald Trump's shocking cabinet appointments. I'm talking about what I think is surprising to very few and yet deeply disappointing. Jack Smith moving to dismiss the charges against Donald Trump in both the election and documents cases, as I like to call them, the insurrection case and the super secret spy documents case. Again, this happened today. He asked a federal judge in Washington to dismiss the indictment charging President-elect Donald J. Trump with plotting to subvert the 2020 election. And he cited the longstanding Justice Department policy against pursuing prosecutions towards a sitting president. Minutes after that filing in Washington, D.C., Jack Smith made a similar filing to an appeals court in Atlanta, ending his attempts to reverse the dismissal of the other federal case against Donald Trump, that being the super secret spy documents case, dismissed on a legal theory that had been rejected by federal courts many times over, but that which Judge Aileen Cannon, a legal scholar by no stretch. y'all have heard me talk about Aileen Cannon quite a bit. Yes, she dismissed the super secret spy documents case against Mr. Trump. Jack Smith had been appealing that. He is now abandoning that appeal, which is quite fascinating when it comes to what that means for federal precedent relating to the constitutional arguments that Aileen Cannon was persuaded by, that again, no other federal court, though these arguments have been brought many times, had been persuaded by, in a nutshell, that the special counsel's office itself is unconstitutional. That was certainly, I think, a bit of a shock to most constitutional legal scholars. But of course, you know, Aileen Cannon going her own way. Lots there to unpack. I'm going to save that because I wanted to bring on my special guest. Again, Professor Whitford, Bill, it's a real treat to be sitting here with you many years after you and I used to confab up Bascom Hill, just a mile and a half or so from here. How are you, Professor Whitford?
I'm fine, and similarly a pleasure for me to be here.
Yes. So let's just jump right into it. You are the named plaintiff. And to set the stage, back in 2010, we had the decennial census. We've had one subsequently in 2020. We'll have one again in 2030. But after the 2010 census, the Wisconsin government was entirely controlled by Republicans. And so they were able to unilaterally, based on the 2010 census, redraw both state Senate and assembly district lines, as well as congressional lines. And they did so especially in state government to basically ensure that Republicans would win and have control of both of those houses of our state legislature for quite some time. They locked it in. As you put it then, Professor Whitford, the legislators chose their voters. Their voters did not choose their elected representatives. How did you view the maps at that time, Professor Whitford, and why did you get involved in this case?
Well, I should say I'm not only a retired law professor, but I'm a longtime political junkie, and I'm a longtime partisan Democrat. So from the partisan Democrat side, they were a total disaster.
And the they here being the redrawn legislative district maps following the 2010 census.
As was demonstrated very clearly in the 2012 elections, where the Democrats won the statewide vote, but the Republicans got close to a two-thirds majority in each.
Yeah, just the exact statistics there from the 2012 election was that despite receiving less than 50% of the vote, Republicans in these statewide races, especially for state assembly, received just shy of 49% of the vote. In the state assembly, they controlled nearly 61% of the assembly seats.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't one person, one vote, is it, Bill?
No, and it was, and there was no reason to expect any change. And so the question became what to do about it. A very good friend of mine who just passed, Fred Kessler from Milwaukee, and also a redistricting expert in the, was sitting in the state legislature at the time, asked me to join a group of other lawyers and partisans. They were discussing that exactly on a weekly, bi-weekly basis in the Watts Tea Room in Milwaukee.
Now a jewelry shop.
Yeah. And we concluded that there was a possible U.S. constitutional claim based on examining the previous precedents. And I won't go into the detail of it, but it was our judgment that Wisconsin had a fact situation that might just persuade Justice Anthony Kennedy.
Who was the swing vote at the time?
Would have been the swing vote.
Yes.
That the U.S. Constitution should put some limits on what I'll call the degree of partisan gerrymandering.
And before this, the Supreme Court had indicated that maybe a gerrymander can be so partisan that it is unconstitutional. They had basically allowed partisan gerrymandering to an extent,
yeah.
Which was, would I be wrong in saying this, Bill, that the degree to which the Supreme Court in the past, prior to your case, and we'll talk about how they've never really solved this problem and won't, that the Supreme Court of the past had basically said, well, we expect there to be a partisan gerrymander to an extent because in most states they didn't have independent redistricting committees, but that there's some hypothetical fact pattern out there where it'll just be too ridiculous.
Well, they hadn't quite held that there could be a fact pattern too ridiculous to pass constitutional muster, but they'd refused to say that there wasn't a fact pattern. They'd been ambivalent about it.
Ruling in the negative, I see, yes.
And Kennedy had written in those earlier opinions, and based on that, we had some reason to believe that we had the fact situation that might get
yes.
his vote. So then the next problem became, and we didn't see any other avenue for change in the decade. You know, the Republicans had 60 to 65% majorities. At that time, Scott Walker was governor. But in any event, you weren't going to change the redistricting without having the legislature involved. You weren't going to change it politically, and of course they wouldn't. So the only avenue was this kind of litigation approach, and we decided to try to bring the case and test. It would have set a new U.S. Supreme Court precedent. That's not a small endeavor to bring a case that has to go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
No, and it takes a long time to boot.
Yes, and even then probably win 5-4 at best.
At best, yep.
So the next question became who were going to be the lawyers who were going to put together the case, and that's no small endeavor. It's not just finding some guy down the street who will volunteer his time. We didn't have any money.
Yeah, before we got on air, Professor, you and I were talking a bit about this, and so as to not bury the lead here, though it may seem hard for people to believe, it is challenging to find expert lawyers who will take on cases like this that are willing to go the long mile all the way to the Supreme Court. You got to get expert witnesses. They cost a fortune. It's an expensive endeavor, and it actually can be quite challenging to find highly skilled counsel that are able to bring this kind of case and
who
will do willing to do it for next to nothing, given that there's all these expenses as
That's
well.
That's right. So I won't take the time to tell you how we lucked into a kind of hodgepodge ad hoc group of lawyers to bring the case, but we were lucky and the case got filed.
So when we come back, we're going to dig into what exactly the claims that you made, why they're important. But let's just set it up. Again, I'm talking to Professor Bill Whitford, longtime law professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School. By Bill's own recounting, a partisan Democrat, I appreciate the transparency there, and a political junkie. What is gerrymandering, Bill? Let's just start with that baseline.
Well, gerrymandering, we could go into the history of the term, but basically it refers to a kind of manipulation of legislative district lines. In the United States, we have a long-time tradition of having single-member districts, with those districts defined geographically and needing to be, we say, contiguous, that is to say, connected. It is possible to draw those lines in a way that will lead to results that are totally disproportionate to the political views of the political entity here at state. In other words, be undemocratic.
Over or under representation of a particular political party, given the overall political polling or voting patterns of that jurisdiction.
That's right.
Effectively cheating, picking your voters instead of voters picking their legislators because of the way the lines are drawn.
Yeah.
We're going to take care of a little bit of business here, Bill. We're going to come back with University of Law School Professor Bill Whitford. We're talking about the groundbreaking gerrymandering case from Wisconsin that made it all the way to the Supreme Court. You may be wondering, well, what the heck happened after that? Why have I heard more about this? We'll discuss that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us. You got questions for Bill or I? 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Keep it locked. I'm telling these tears go fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame.